Welcome, and thank you for joining the National Multiple Sclerosis Society's MS Learn Online Internet Program. I'm Rick Turner, your host and medical correspondent. About 15% of people with MS have a more progressive disease course from the start. Some never have any attacks, but worsen slowly from the onset of their MS, experiencing symptoms such as tremor, poor coordination, difficulty in walking, and other problems. Others have attacks followed by incomplete recovery of function. The residual losses build over time. During today's webcast, we'll explore the treatment options available for people with progressive forms of MS and what we're learning from research in the fight against MS. To help us better understand progressive MS and its treatments and research, we have Dr. James Bowen with us. Dr. Bowen is the medical director for the MS Center at Evergreen Healthcare in Kirkland, Washington. Welcome to the program, Dr. Bowen.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Explain to us, Dr. Bowen, the different types of progressive MS, because there's not just one, right?
That's right. There are four types of MS, three of which have progressive in the title. Patients often confuse these, and I think it's easier to start with relapsing remitting disease, where patients have attacks. An attack will come on, and then they will improve over time, often days, weeks, or months they will improve. They may or may not get all the way back to baseline, and the fact that they don't get back to baseline does not imply that they have progressive MS. That can still be relapsing remitting. The difference in relapsing remitting and progressive MS is really the baseline. So in relapsing remitting disease, between MS attacks, the patients are stable and their baseline is holding steady. But in progressive forms of MS, that baseline is slowly worsening over usually a period of months. With primary progressive disease, the patients never ever have an attack as part of the definition. So if a patient had optic neuritis and then they've had a slowly progressive course for 20 years, that's not primary progressive because they had that single attack of optic neuritis. Rather, primary progressive cases are those whose baseline has been slowly sliding throughout the entire disease course. Secondary progressive disease starts out like relapsing remitting with these attacks, with stable baselines in between attacks, but then over time the baseline starts changing so that it also starts slowly worsening even between attacks. So a secondary progressive disease can still have attacks, but even between these attacks the baseline is sliding. The final type is progressive relapsing. These patients start out like primary progressive with a sliding baseline, but then at some future time they have a few attacks sprinkled in. So the main difference is whether the baseline is stable or not.
And in terms of the overall population of people with MS, what percentage have progressive forms?
Well, initially, 10 to 15% of people present with progressive forms, and this would be either primary progressive or progressive relapsing. The rest of them with their initial part of the disease, it'd be 85% or so, have relapsing remitting. However, over time, the majority of those also switch into secondary progressive, and this usually occurs somewhere 8 to 15 years into the disease course. So if you do a cross-section at any one period of time, it's 40 to 50% of people have relapsing remitting and the remainder have some form of progressive disease.
Okay. And in terms of the people who have progressive forms of MS, how much do we know about them? Are there any particular demographic characteristics that can identify that group that's going to either have it or in the future has it? What do we know about them?
Well, as a group, they tend to be older than the relapsing remitting population. And this is probably not that it just involves older patients. So this would be people in their 50s and 60s. It's probably a reflection of the fact that relapsing remitting disease is simply discovered years earlier than the progressive forms, because this dramatic event happened with a relapse that brought them to medical attention, whereas the progressive forms, it just creeps up on them, and it takes years before people realize that something was going on here. So they tend to be older, and then even though MS is about 70% female to 30% male, in the progressive forms, it's much closer to 50-50 male versus female.
And in terms of actual susceptibility, is there any racial difference involved that we know of?
Well, MS is much more common in whites, especially Northern European whites, than it is in other racial groups. However, the primary progressive tends to happen more often in non-white groups. So a black patient, for example, that has MS is more likely to have one of the progressive forms than a white patient with MS.
Interesting. I asked you this question a few months ago, Doctor, when you joined us for a webcast, but I'm going to ask it again, given the topic. Why are there fewer disease-modifying agents available to treat people with progressive forms of MS?
This is really a reflection of the difficulty with which we have to study progressive forms of MS. And it really gets back to the fact that in relapsing remitting disease, we can count the relapses. But in progressive disease, you can't count relapses. So with primary progressive MS, by definition, they have never, ever had a relapse, so you can't count them. Even with secondary progressive disease, where they can have relapses, the relapses are less frequent than they are with relapsing remitting, so there are fewer of them to count. What this means is that to study progressive MS, we have to use disability instead, and our measures of disability are quite crude. An example of how this affects a study is that there was recently a study of 900 primary progressive MS patients, 450 of them treated with placebo, and at the end of 3 years, the placebo group had not changed on our measurements. I think the patients would tell us that they had changed, but we simply could not measure it. So if you can't measure it, you can't study it. As a result, the number of patients that you have to enroll in a primary progressive study is at least triple or four times what it is with relapsing remitting disease. And of course, this drives the cost of the study up as well. So even though people are very interested in studying progressive disease, it is much harder to do just for technical reasons.
How about changes in MRIs? Isn't that something that could be measured?
So MRI also is much more active in relapsing remitting disease. So with the progressive forms of MS, they have fewer spots developing on the MRI over time. And as a result, it also turns out not to be a very well-performing endpoint for us. So, again, it comes back mostly to disability.
Okay, then with those treatment options that are not approved for progressive forms of MS, they are approved for relapsing forms, is there any harm in a person with the progressive form taking them?
So I think there is little risk of doing so, and many of us in the MS field treat our progressive patients with the same drugs we do for our relapsing remitting patients. The main difference is that with relapsing remitting, we have absolute proof from research studies that they're helpful. In progressive MS, we suspect that they're helpful, but we don't have a study to prove it.
So besides those substances that are used off-label, are there some specific treatment options that are approved for progressive forms of MS?
The one that has the indication, the FDA indication, is mitoxantrone, which is approved for progressive forms of MS. And I emphasize that forms is plural, so we can really use it for any of these types of MS. In addition to that, beta-seron has a study that was done in Europe that strongly suggested that it is helpful for progressive MS, though a follow-up study actually done at the simultaneous at the same time in North America failed to show any benefit. So of the available drugs, mitoxantrone is the one that has the most data and has the FDA indication for progressive MS.
Well, MS research, of course, continues to bring us new knowledge about the disease. Dr. Bowen, are there recent discoveries that are more relevant for people with progressive MS, including any clinical trials that are going on?
Well, again, the number of trials going on for new medicines for MS continue to be done mostly in relapsing remitting because the cost is much, much lower and the study can be done faster in that subset of patients. Nevertheless, there are studies being done in progressive MS, and several of these are ongoing or in the planning stage. Most of these are phase two studies where they're not going to be big enough to actually get a drug on the market, but they're looking for evidence that the drugs are at least providing some benefit, and if they're positive enough in those studies, they'll go on to the big studies. But there are a handful of companies that are pursuing this, yes.
So then, given that picture, do you see any upcoming treatments on the horizon for people with a progressive course of MS?
Well, I think that in the near future, we're going to be using the relapsing remitting drugs and just extrapolating them to this progressive population as well. But I think that in the next 3 to 5 years, some of these other studies are going to be done, finished, and hopefully they'll show positive results and we'll have some actually approved treatments for this group as well.
We certainly hope so. And in terms of the research, are we learning anything special about MS from people with progressive forms? What would you think about that?
Well, they certainly give us a different insight into the disease, and they have shifted our emphasis away from thinking about entirely inflammatory lesions in the immune system toward more subtle ongoing damage that's being done. So I think that the progressive cases have really contributed a lot to our knowledge about what's going on as far as damage occurring in areas of the brain that otherwise appear normal, and also damage in the cortex, which is on the surface of the brain. So historically, we have not thought that there was damage there, but the progressive cases have indicated that, yes, there is. And so it's really broadened our view of what the injury is going on in patients with MS and what the causes of that injury might be.
And we continue to learn more all the time. Well, Dr. Bowen, once again, thank you for being with us for this important webcast. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I invite you to join us for two more webcasts in the Progressive MS series. These webcasts include long-term care services, as well as a health psychologist who will talk to us about loss, grief, and adaption. The National MS Society is proud to be a source of information for you about multiple sclerosis. Our comments are based on professional advice, published experience, and expert opinion, but do not represent individual therapeutic recommendation or prescription. For specific information and advice, consult a qualified physician. If you have a question that was not addressed, please email us at mslearnonline@nmss.org. If you'd like more information on multiple sclerosis, click on the resources link on your screen or call the chapter nearest you for an answer to your question. You can reach your chapter by calling 1-800-FIGHT-MS, 1-800-344-4867. You may also want to check the National MS Society's website, where you'll find more information about today's topic and a menu of other webcasts available to participate in. Funding for this program was provided as an unrestricted educational grant from these National MS Society chapters. For the National MS Society, I'm Rick Turner, wishing you health and happiness.